Time to talk rail safety issues in Wisconsin with Rod Kroonen, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you with us. If you have some questions for him as we move along today, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Rod Kroonen, welcome back.
Well, good to be with you, Larry. As we would say, a lot of trains have passed under the bridge since we've talked last.
You know, we were talking about Mount Pleasant in the last segment of our program, and there's something that kind of relates to this segment as well, because there was a train car filled with flour that derailed this past Sunday afternoon near Mount Pleasant in Racine County, and I think the car's, the front wheels came off, did they not? And
well, it was more complex than that. The Union Pacific, that owns the old Chicago Northwestons, that was their freight route that was built in the early 1900s to get around Racine and Kenosha. And it's become a heavy-duty route for many reasons. And it serves the Pleasant Prairie Power Plant right below there in Kenosha County. And as best as we can ascertain, somehow there was a derailment with a car. We don't have the final report yet, but we were told there was a hot box failure, which means that the bearing failed. And a hot box detector out of Milwaukee didn't pick it up. There's a hot box detector in the village of Pleasant Springs, right below County Trunk C, which is Old Spring Road, or is Spring Road, right near Old Spring Road, and when it got off the track, or as we'd say on the ground, it was a 112-car train, I'm told. They're pulling it, two 4,400-horsepower locomotive. They don't realize that anything's off, and they dragged it from roughly Giddings Road all the way down. That's where the physical marks on the track where the wheels went on tore up several crossings. Destroyed Giddings Road. That's a road that at one time was under consideration for potential closure. I don't think it is now, but Spring Road, County Trunk C, is part of a major rebuilding plan. Bill Andreasen, who's the the town chairman or village president now over there, is just superb in trying to work these things through. We almost have the area memorized, and then they kept pulling down further and crossed Frontage Road going under the bridge. That's one that we predicted fatalities at, and there was one there last September. Tore that up, took that out of operation. This is a million-dollar follow-up anyway on it, but it looks as if it was a bearing failure on it. Those are rare, about one in every 10 million car miles. But when they do occur, they're
a problem.
Mess.
It's a problem. Well, now, are you going to have to pull that money out of your budget to...
No. No, that's the railroad's issue. However, they've been... Union Pacific is very good at notifying us. We want to know what's happening, what's up, so we can try to assess it with them. They don't ever want problems like this.
No.
And I would say the Union Pacific is one of the more safety-conscious railroads on things like that. And of interest is we've been working with Mount Pleasant to put in their bicycle trail, and they want to go under the bridge. So when I called my RSA, railroad safety analyst, Tom Clowder, on that, he says, weren't we just there a week ago? was correct. But now the thing that's of interest, too, this flour that was in there, we believe was destined to be refined a little bit below in Kenosha, Urbane, and Truesdale, and that they bring in this piecio wheat, and that becomes flour for pizzas. That's one of the largest generation of pizza flour in the Midwest. But it comes from Alberta and Saskatchewan. All you talk about an international world, but...
there we go. Well, I tell you what, we have lots of callers to visit with you. So let's go to the phones. Dory in Sun Prairie, I believe, is up next. Dory, hi.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Say, I have a question. It's been an ongoing problem. So we have to cross the railroad tracks every time we leave our driveway, okay?
Mm-hmm. And you are in the city of Sun Prairie or in the town of Burke?
In the city of Sun Prairie.
All right.
We pay taxes to them anyway. And every time we cross the driveway, our driveway is no problem. It's in good, wonderful shape. But probably about 6 feet to the east, there's a hole right next to the railroad track. It's probably about 3 feet across, and it's very, very deep. I mean, drop a stone, you can't hear it drop, you know. And I call the city, and they say, oh, well, that's a railroad's problem.
All right. Now, let me explain that, and this is a problem that irritates citizens, including myself. I'll be the first to tell you that winter is very hard in Wisconsin roads, and it's very hard in Wisconsin's railroad crossings. The statute states that the road authority, which I'm going to assume is the city of Sun Prairie, needs to notify the railroad. All right, but in request it. They have 30 days to come to a plan. If not, we get involved, all right, and we can hold a hearing. It's a statutory responsibility for the railroads.
So Sun Prairie first has to come.
That's the statute.
Yeah.
So Sun Prairie needs to notify them. If they have any questions on how to do that, have them call our office at the 266-7607 and talk to my computer man, Tom Running, and he'll give them the procedure. Now, that's the Wisconsin and Southern. The track is owned by the state of Wisconsin, but the Wisconsin and Southern has responsibility for it. And the man that does that, Ben Meehan, is very conscientious. I think he gets stretched out quite a bit, but those are no excuses. Rough crossings are a terrible safety hazard. If you want, if the city needs some help, have him call me at the 266-3182, and we'll find a way to make an inspection to help press the issue. Now, we always do like to have the road authority copy us when they notify the railroad, so we can be set to go, and many times I can have discussions that may not be too friendly with the railroad about living up to their statutory responsibilities.
Well, I used to be an EMT, and I am just really terrified somebody's going to fall in it, or an animal will fall in it, and as I say, nobody is claiming responsibility.
Well, you really have to go to the city officials and say you have to.
Yeah, and if they have a problem, have them call us. Now, what they will do in many cases, all right, they will fill it, okay, because the railroad may say we can't get out and do it and give what we'd call a temporary patch. This time of the year it's called a cold patch, which they're doing throughout the cities on roads. And usually the railroad will stand the cost on that. I can't tell you what the Wisconsin Southern's policy is, but I know if that is on a line for the Burlington Northern, the Canadian Pacific, the Union Pacific, the Canadian National, they'll work with the locals and spend $300 to $500 to give a temporary patch so they can rebuild it. Now, I would say while the Union Pacific at times is slower getting to this, when they get in their crossings, they have these concrete panel crossings now that are superb. When they get the job done, that is really good for a multitude of reasons. But that's a $10,000 to $12,000 rebuild.
Yeah.
But if you have problems, call our office, and I again will have some stern discussion there with 3, 4, and 5-letter words, Larry, with the railroads on living up to their responsibility. I feel like a gun shooter at times, but by God, I'll tell you, rough crossings are a terrible nightmare.
So good luck, Dory. Get a hold of your city officials. Thanks for calling. Betty in Camp Douglas, it's your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hello. Recently, I hope this is pertinent to your subject today, but recently we were down in Sandwich, Illinois, with a son for about 12 days, and he lived not too far from a railroad track on which the Burlington Northern and Santa Fe went through.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's busy track there, isn't it?
It's very busy. So I was very aware of, although we have a track not too far from us near paralleling Highway 21.
Sure, you have. That's the old Milwaukee Road, the Canadian Pacific, and that's a heavy haul railroad.
Yeah, but I didn't hear. But I heard on this, and I said to my husband, "I'm going to call Rodney when we get home when the first time he's on." Now I'm going to because I can't. You don't want to hear my soprano voice. I'm going to use a pitch pipe, and this is the way the whistle went.
Okay.
She She did it correctly. Two longs, a short, and a long for the crossing. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, but I never heard that before. Does each railroad have its own?
Oh, no. Back in my youth, in 1855, those were the established sounds for a crossing. Two longs, a short, and a long. Now, I'm told by custom how that was established, and trains very seldom went over 50 miles an hour then, is they're approaching a crossing, and Henry Ford's device hadn't been invented as yet. There would usually be a farmer coming up with a hay wagon or herding some of his cows, so the two longs were to notify him, and then the bleep, the short one, was to wake up the guy in the hay wagon, and then you're to blow going through it. And that is a federal mandate.
Interesting.
Now, we no longer use a whistle as such that was powered off the steam boiler. At one time, the railroads used an air compressor to run whistles. Now it's an electronic device, and the sound is called a chine, C-H-I-N-E, and they can vary it from 95 to 112 decibels. Let's put it this way, it's extremely piercing. But when we ride with a cruise and you're approaching people that walk dogs in the track, ride motorcycles, snowmobiles, or are walking on the track, boy, that's the engineer's most valuable tool until you've been with them, and they don't like to run over people.
No, they don't.
The train always wins.
Thanks a lot for calling, Betty. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Rod Crudin, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking rail safety issues today with Rod Crudin, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Our lines are all filled, so we'll go right to the phones and Frank and Prairie to Sheen.
We have roundabouts coming, or they want to put them in 4 or 5 years. And the question I have is, they said they've done simulations. Are signals like stop and go lights or the roundabouts the safer way for holding traffic, which is a block away from the railroad tracks?
Well, I'll have to tell you, I can't answer that. I have experienced enough roundabouts, particular big ones, where I've been impressed. The one where 29 blends into 53 above Chippewa Falls, you don't even have to slow down. It works there. Now, when you get into a city, it's a different set of circumstances, but we have no statutory control over that. The fact is, in Prairie du Chien, and I am very well versed with that, you have 45, 50, 55 trains a day. We are going to be moving ahead at Wisconsin Avenue, one way going west to the bridge, to install that barrier gate. And I think there's enough room there, whatever they're going to do on Highway 35 should not have an effect on the signal. But as I've been there watching it, we'll have people, and I remember a very distinguished white-haired gentleman with his wife and their Mercury Marquis just bending off just as the gates are coming down, shooting through. They speed up to get under the gates. And the train is down to 30 miles an hour, because not because of the city, but because they're slowing for while loosing the bridge. And when you have a 10,000-ton train or more, you don't speed up and slow down real quickly.
Yeah.
So some of the lighter trains that are coming off the bridge and that clear, and that bridge is probably 7,000-8,000 foot down over the Wisconsin River, they're back up close to 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But I think you'd want to go to your traffic engineer in Prairie du Chien and ask him about that. Or the other pro at the DOT is Mark Morrison, and his number is 608-266-2941. Mark is our expert that we go to on placement of traffic devices near railroad crossings. And he knows Prairie du Chien like the back of his hand. He's a very skilled professional engineer.
266-2941.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Frank, for calling. Appreciate it. Tom in Cumberland, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Hi.
Did Mr. Crudin hear about an incident in Stanbury in January?
Well, we are aware that there was a derailment, and I believe also that, now, Stanbury, is that Washburn County or Sawyer?
I think Washburn.
Okay, there's a 10,000-foot sighting there. It's a heavily wooded area. And many times, let me tell you, one of the problems we have, and it may not be the case here, we have people that bounce off the side of the train, the crew does not know it, and they'll go into the ditch. And as he's sitting in the ditch, the question he asks himself, should I call the sheriff and have him come over and give me a breathalyzer test to see if I was in violation? And immediately his inner answer is no. Or the other question he has, should I call the sheriff to have him write up this accident, what I did, so my insurance company can be advised of my driving habits? No. So the accident goes unreported. We believe, particularly in rural areas, there are as many accidents unreported as there are reported. All right. Many times the train crew or somebody locally will call us on that. Now, I don't know if that's what happened there, but Stanbury is now a 10,000-foot sighting, and I believe there are numbers 15 turnouts on either end, so the train can pass through there at 35 to 40 miles an hour while another one's sitting there. That track, you know, has 30 to 34 trains a day. If you've been over there, that's a busy railroad, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It is.
It's about, what, 15 miles west or so of Hayward?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you pretty familiar with that crossing there?
I can't say that I am. Of the 4,133 crossings of the state, 1,200 of them I know quite well. I have been through there, but when we get north of Ladysmith, our demands dramatically fall off because they're down to what we call ADTs of 300 to 400 cars in that per day.
Mm, interesting.
But what problems do you see with that crossing?
Well, I drive a ready-mixed concrete truck. And we were hauling for the power line up there, and I came through Stanbury, and you run parallel with the tracks for a bit, and then you have to make a sharp right turn, and you're right on top of the tracks.
Yes. I've been on that road many times.
And I made the sharp turn. The lights came on. I looked for the train, which was more than a half mile away. I looked back, and the gates were down, and the gate was between the engine and the drum on my truck. I could not move.
That's a bad position to be in.
It was a real bad position. I got backed up just enough to have the train miss me without breaking the gate.
Well, the gates are fiberglass, so if they're broken, you only have to pay for them to make a service call to come out on that. If that's the crossing that I'm thinking about, it's got a little bit of a hump to it too, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to come up and that now. So you know how the signals work, and if I'm not mistaken, in 03 or 04, I just put those in. That was another $145,000 because with the siding tied in. But 28 to 32 seconds before the train comes, the signals start to flash, and there's 4 to 8 seconds before the gate starts to descend. To give a slow-moving vehicle like yourself or a school bus time to clear.
Interesting.
Now, if you think it was less than that, if you get us the exact road, I will have the signal maintainer, and they check those every month. And I'd have to tell you, as I've dealt with signal maintainers, they view signals as precious as their children. They never want to have problems.
I can understand that. I think the biggest problem is you can't see the light until you turn that
little corner, and then you're right there at the crossing.
And then you're right there, and it was just, it was so fast.
Well, we might be able to, if you get me the road, I'll have Jack Pollock, our major signal supervisor, when he's up there, look at it, and maybe we need to put on what we call side lights, an additional set of lights. I generally fund those. And with the signalizations all in, depending on what has to be done, I could do that maybe as low as $700 to $800. We don't do much for $700 to $800. But I can always find that in our budget. But we don't want to be visiting you in the hospital or looking at you in the casket.
No.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I ride on that road myself. I'm trying to remember the name of the county road, and I just can't think of it right
off. You could be my resource, Larry, if you give that.
I have to use my brain a little bit and think about that because we have a It's a little shortcut I take to get to a cabin that we have in middle Eau Claire Lake, a little north of and east of Hayward. And
I thought you gently came in by the jet-powered pontoon boat.
No. M comes to mind, but I'm not positive. Thanks, Tom. And, yeah, follow up on that. I want
if he can just read me the milepost, and I'll go to my master chart.
The milepost. Yeah,
I have a chart that's 42 foot long that we roll up. Craig Butterfield built a box for us on it, so I look at that all the time. But I'm going to guess you're probably at about milepost 330 or 335, but I don't have all those memorized.
Thanks, Tom, for calling. Bob and Lowell, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon, sir. I'd like to know what your opinion is on a subject that's kind of dear to my heart. I work for a Class 1 railroad, and it seems more and more the Class 1 railroads, and especially the one that owns that track you were talking about earlier in Sun Prairie, try to turn these tracks over to either so-called regional railroads or other entities to run who don't play by the same rules, and I know they're going to say, yes, they do, but they don't. Short lines don't live up to the same standards of FRA as everybody else. And create in that cell phone hazardous conditions. The Class 1 railroad that I work for, I guarantee you, if somebody reported a hole along the track that a person could fall into, or a deep hole, a hazardous condition report would be generated, and it would get repaired immediately, because they're not going to pay a claim for either a railroad employee following that hole.
This fellow knows his railroads, because as we deal with the Jim Krieger at the Canadian Pacific, or the fellows at the UP, if you live in Lowell, the old Northwestern goes through there. They're very conscientious on getting temporary repairs done. They don't want problems.
I guarantee you, and that's because that's the way Class 1 railroads operate. But short line railroads, like the one you mentioned earlier, do not. And those of us who have been in this industry for a long time, we know that. That's why they can operate at lower costs and get away with things they do, because they don't play by the same rules. And I'd just like to know how you feel about that, sir.
Well, we think they all need to play by the same rules, particularly if they're safety conscious. And we are addressing all railroads. I have ongoing discussions with them. They're called some type of matches that we do that become very severe over things. And you got to get this stuff done. And the Wisconsin Southern, within their economic means, in that is not, track is not owned by them now.
No.
That's the old Milwaukee Road that they own briefly. It's owned by the state. It's going to be a high-speed rail line that connects Watertown into Madison, and that project hasn't started as yet. But we think there should be a very quick response, like you're talking about. And I recall when we had a bad crossing on the Canadian Pacific east of Portage, maybe 10, 12,000 foot, it's at County Trunk that's near the trailer park. And by gosh, when we got on top of them, within a week, they had it repaired. This is inexcusable on stuff like that. Now, the first thing I will tell you, railroad employees never want to really have to file any more reports than they do, because somebody always questions, and I can understand that. We'd like to see these condition reports filed, and where we get a copy of it and that, we're not that hard on them. But the other one we'd like to see you, if you're in operations, file are what we'd call near misses. And Craig Willett's been the best on your line for following those. It's sort of like if you were around O'Hare Field and you have American Airlines that calls in and says, I missed Delta by 500 foot. We ought to know about that, because maybe the next time they're not going to miss the accidents they have to report. But to get to your union chief, and most of those guys we know, and they can call me, they've all got my numbers. But there's another factor, too. How many people out there in a publicly traded stock, railroads that have done quite well from the Union Pacific, Canadian National, the last thing they want is a stockholder calling in or appearing at the meeting and saying, why isn't my railroad taking care of this? The fear of this ripples right to the executive board. And if you need to become a shareholder, Edward Jones has a plan where you can spend as low as $100, and even for $200, the commission charge is only $5. See, by statute, I can't own railroad stock, but I have a lot of friends that own $200, $300, $400 worth. So we get the reports. That's called social pressure. But I appreciate your interest in this.
Thanks, Bob. Mark at Oshkosh, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
A while back, I thought I heard that Medina Junction, the road going through that crosses the railroad there, was going to be closed. And
we looked at that, but my decision on that was 3 or 4 years ago not to close it. And that was after working with the township. I believe the Department of Natural Resources became involved because there were a lot of people that are up there that are hunting. There's a bicycle trail, you know, the old Northwestern that comes up from Larson that crosses there. And if I'm not mistaken, one of those roads, because of the heavy rail traffic, I spent $125,000, $130,000 signalizing that.
Yes, there's a quite extensive signal system there that was never there, just a couple of crossbucks that used to be there.
And, yeah.
That was prior to the derailment they had up there. Two trains collided back in the late 70s.
That's right. What was happening, this is a classic incident of railroads not coordinating. The Northwestern was tearing out their line that went north towards Shawano. And a donkey crane got T-boned by a Soo line. Oh, yeah, I think there was a fatality involved in that. Yeah, your memory's pretty good. The railroads like to have forgotten about that goof-up.
Yeah, it was a work train. I know there was cars piled up pretty high for quite a long time there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that should be in good shape. For those of you, Medina County, is that still in Winnebago?
Winnebago. Yeah. Yeah, it's right on the border of Winnebago, Outagamie there.
Yeah, because I believe that's in the town of Clayton, and Arden, who's the town chairman, has been very good to work with. And, boy, he's been a stickler on putting the railroad to the wall and keeping the crossings up. Surface.
The question I have is, I was surprised because I can think of a number of crossings in Winnebago and even close to Outagamie County that could use a signal of that stature that don't have them, and I was wondering how they come to those decisions.
Well, we could spend a whole hour on how we do that, but roughly, while it's the amount of car traffic, in this case it's low, but we look at the train traffic, we put heavy weight on that, and then we'll look at what's the vision, what's the past accident history, do you have school buses, are there propane trucks, there are all sorts of factors that come into this. But the fact is, when we have 30-plus freight trains a day, and that line connects Vancouver, British Columbia, with New Orleans and Mobile, you have just begun to see the traffic on that line. So what we're doing, we're trying to look ahead to the future, because my federal aid dollars are extremely minimal, and we have to juggle them. But that's a very good question. I wish more citizens were concerned about that. But if you have one in Winnebago or Outagamie County that you think ought to be looked at, gee, give us a call.
What's the number again, by the way?
608-266-3182 is my direct line. Now, granted, I'm never there, but I will pick it up.
Eventually.
It'll get picked up sometime during the day. We have calls from sheriff, police, fire, railroads, everything comes in there. The last time I usually check it is about midnight. Hey, Larry, I'm an old man. If I don't get 5.5, 6 hours of sleep, boy, I'll tell you, I start to fade.
All right. Mark, thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, my memory isn't as bad as I thought. It is Highway. Somebody called in and said it is Highway M in Stanbury.
Yeah, okay.
So there we got that. Louise in Spring Green, your turn. Hi, Louise.
Larry, thanks for having this. I live right across the street from the railroad that goes through Spring Green, and I'm wondering if there's any way to find out what's being hauled on a particular line. We have a glass company out here, so I'm sure we have some chemicals.
Yes, yes.
And if there is any program to train residents of the rail corridor about evacuation procedures in case of a derailment.
Yeah.
Well, all right, I believe there are few, if any, hazmats hauled on that line. It's a very low traffic line.
Mm-hmm.
If the ethanol plant
goes in Marina.
In Arena, okay, most of that traffic will come east. All right. Ethanol is classed as a hazmat, as is gasoline and other things. The question is, would you class anhydrous ammonia and a few of the other fertilizers that are going to some of the towns there? But the railroad, the Wisconsin and Southern, and they're in the Wisconsin phone book, and Ken Lucht is the fellow you'd want to talk to there, very conscientious fellow. They have a hazmat program sponsored by the AAR, Association of American Railroads, working in conjunction with the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, to train local firefighters on things like this. If there is an area in the state where you have the least threat, that has to be it.
Hmm. Well, I enjoy the trains no end. I get waves from the engineers, and I even enjoy the traveling graffiti artist show.
Isn't it amazing how that stuff keeps showing up?
Well,
on
some of it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that was the original rail line in the state that connected Milwaukee and Waukesha through Milton Junction mm-hmm. to Madison back in 1855, 1856. No, I did not ride the first train out there, Larry, nor the second.
Thanks, Louise.
It's fun living next to it.
Thank you. Tom and Friendship, hi to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a Union Pacific locomotive engineer, and I was employed by the Chicago Northwestern when Union Pacific bought the company out. And listening to this program, I think it's a real good eye-opener. I got a couple of statements I'd like to make. First off, you're talking about crossing safety, and I feel as an engineer and a conductor point of view, I'd like to see the license plates with bigger numbers.
Mm. We realize how difficult it is for the cab when you get over 20, 25 miles an hour to get that license plate.
Exactly.
Okay, there is a state statute now in place that allows you people to report that directly, and the police department has to catch it. But I know when I'm out with the crews, boy, you're concentrating on other things. You can't grab that license plate, can you?
You're exactly correct on that.
Boy, now, just so you're aware, as we've evaluated that line, and this is what we'd call the Adams line that runs from Butler, built 1905 to 1911, we've added quite a few signals along there, and just the other side of the river in the town of Nisita, we've worked with Vince Marchetti, the town chairman there. You're going to be having new crossings this year. We've been on this for 3 or 4 years at County Trunk G, 19th, 18th, 16th, and then that one street is at 23rd is going to be closed, and also Shrine Road, where the fog hits. But also there's a hearing coming up, I believe, April 17th. It's a Tuesday night at the Strong's Prairie Town Hall, and your other safety captain, Jeff McClinchy, is going to be there. The Union Pacific would like to see 20th Avenue below the golf course closed. You probably have that crossing memorized just before the river.
There's a big development there called Northern Bay, and there's a lot of traffic. You get a lot of weekenders in there, and they just kind of daydream and look around at that golf course.
But they should be able to go over on Check Avenue. The Union Pacific spent about $8,000 on a study. When I've been up there, I've driven from Adams over, pretended that we were a police car. And then how would EMS go? Where would the fire truck go? And their study showed that most of the people going to Northern Bay, Dave Kennedy put that together, and I'm told it's a world-class golf course. In those condos, let's put it this way, none of my friends could afford them, Larry, with a bay. But so we want to get this moved over. But they'd go up I-39 over 21 and come down Arkdale. That's what the report showed. But to our surprise, your company, the Union Pacific, and it's in their petition, has offered the town of Strong's Prairie $50,000 to close the crossing.
Oh, man.
You don't want to know the last time that the Union Pacific offered a township more than $7,500 to close a crossing? See, and I can match it with $7,500. But, and that crossing is a jumper, isn't it?
It is that. And speaking of jumping, we need to jump out of here. Rod, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit. Rod Gruden, Wisconsin's Commissioner of Railroads, our guest, and he'll be back and we'll talk with him again. Sorry we didn't get to everybody. Jim Packard will be filling in for me tomorrow and talking with Dr. Frank Lawless, author of The IQ Answer, and then he'll be visiting with Janet Jenkins of the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection That's tomorrow here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.